Okay. Can I just say it won't be as broad. I noted McPherson. There's issue which I've raised myself around the minutes, but there are other issues from Secretariat which are issues about information of the committee. So maybe for today, Honorable Mbuyane, I hear that you second the adoption. We will actually then clarify when we get to the committee business some of the issues, and we hope that it won't be any other issue. But I think I noted McPherson, but as a committee and secretariat, there were issues that they were suggested for us to consider at the committee business. So without taking much of your time, can we then proceed, unless there's an objection, on the agenda? Without any objection, can we then proceed in adopting the agenda and pick up the next item, Secretariat?
Chair, we're having the briefing by DTIC on beneficiation, but the acting DDG would like to start proceedings and then introduce the two presenters on beneficiation and localizations. Thereafter, Mr. Dr. Tebogo Makube will brief us on localization. Or Dr. Naidu, my policy chair, will brief us on beneficiation. Thanks.
Yes, thank you very much, Secretariat. I think largely we do know that in terms of beneficiation, the focus will be the issue of the government's beneficiation strategy. And obviously the DTIC's role in the beneficiation strategy will be what we're looking at, and broadly initiatives and intervention that the DTIC is undertaking. Specific projects that are underway and in the pipeline, including timelines and expected outcomes of the project and the impact of the COVID-19 pandemic on the rollout of these projects. So I think we're expecting that on the beneficiation side, but also on the localization, government localization policy strategy and the DTIC role in localization, and the incorporation monitoring of localization during procurement under the national disaster situation. So we're expecting to have that kind of link to today's presentation. Can I then invite our DDG and the team to be able to actually then, DDG, you will lead your team and then be able to give us the presentation. I'm sure the first one is the beneficiation. And we'll actually pick up the next one. Welcome, DDG and the team, and the floor is yours. Good morning.
Good morning, Honorable Chair. Good morning, the Honorable Members of the Committee. I'm having a bit of a sound problem. I battle to hear. I hope I'm audible. Andre, am I audible enough?
You're audible, yes. Well.
Okay, so I will proceed. After the introduction, I guess I have to move around the house to find a better spot, so I'm also able to hear the proceedings of the meeting. First, I would like to thank the Honorable Chair and the committee for inviting the department to share its work on these two important topics. That is the South African strategy on beneficiation, or what we also call value addition to its mineral resources, government policy on localization with key focus on the work we have done, especially in the recent months, on personal protective equipment and products, especially in the current fight against the global pandemic known as COVID-19. These two topics for us are very key important pillars of our industrial policy, and we continue to sharpen the deployment and the usage of these instruments to achieve greater industrialization and industrial development. Today, I'm here with my colleagues, as the chair and the secretariat has already noted. Dr. Umisa Naidu will take us through the beneficiation presentation. Dr. Tebogo Makube will take us through the localization presentation, but I just thought, as we are introducing the two topics, I might as well just introduce the two and demonstrate the linkages to our industrial policy. So we'll go on to the beneficiation one. I will just do a brief introduction on my side, and the quiz that Dr. Wemisha put through the presentation on the screen. I will just do the first slide, and she will proceed from there.
We can project the presentation.
Okay. Is the presentation on the screen? I don't know, I'm battling with connection issues today.
It is on the screen.
The presentation.
Okay. All right. I think we just thought that we need to put the conversation a bit into context. First, to recognize that South Africa has got the largest world reserves of platinum, manganese, and it's also got the largest share of other minerals such as chrome and vanadium reserves. So we do have a very rich mineral endowment, which is currently estimated at about $2.3 trillion. However, we are concerned that this comparative advantage of our natural resources endowment has not really been fully leveraged to build a dynamic industrial economy. For us, in that topic, we are talking about how have we been able to link or at least build the backward, the forward, and the side stream linkages that are very important to a broader industrial policy conversation. Value addition and beneficiation, as the topic itself, is not a new phenomenon. As the members of the committee would recall, there was a book published by Dr. Rastamji and Ben Fine, which coined this kind of beneficiation work as a mineral energy complex. The establishment of companies such as ISCO, Sasol, the aluminium smelters, and the ferrochrome smelters have been one of the key evolution of South African industrial policy at the back of very focused and certain policy choices that have been undertaken. Obviously, in the beneficiation space, the DTI is not driving this work alone. Actually, the greater part of the tools resides with the Department of Mineral Resources and Energy. I thought we should just mention the three in particular. The important role played by the Mineral Petroleum Resource Development Act as an anchor act that talks about how exploration and development of mineral mining should be undertaken in the local economy. It's also compensated or supported by the Mining Charter. A couple of years ago, the Department of Mineral Resources and Energy also published what we call the South African Beneficiation Strategy, which began to identify a couple of key value chains that are necessary and important to drive industrial development. Our role in this, as the Department of Trade and Industry and Competition, we do complement the work that has been undertaken by the mineral resources, focusing mainly on the industrial policy or the industrial opportunities arising out of the mineral value chains. I will leave the presentation to Misha to take us through the remaining slides.
Thank you, DG. DG, can you take the presenter?
Okay, thank you, Tandi. Good morning, Chair, honorable members and colleagues. I'll take you through the presentation on beneficiation, looking at some of the work that the department, together with our stakeholders, have been pursuing. On this slide, we look at the 2019 performance of the mining sector. Mining production has decreased both in 2019 and in 2018. We only account for 8% of GDP, the mining sector, down from 15% in 1990. Employment has declined to currently about 464,000 jobs. South Africa only accounts for 1% of total global exploration expenditure, compared to 14% for competitor countries like Canada and Australia, as well as 13% for the rest of Africa. And this is an indicator of investment. Top three mineral sales is coal, platinum group metals, and gold. We also see the high rhodium and palladium prices in 2019, driven by strict emission laws, more petrol and fewer diesel engines. Platinum has also been impacted by electric vehicles. The world demand for coal fell as countries opt for renewables iron ore prices increase due to shortages, as well as mega trends related to increased substitution, digitalization, decarbonization, creating new demand for battery metals, as well as opportunities for fuel cells. There's also a greater integration and need for advanced mining technology to remain competitive, as well as social investor and regulatory pressure to reduce environmental impact. Some of the key challenges is a supportive policy and legislative regime, input prices for key minerals and metals, which does place local manufacturers at a disadvantage compared to foreign manufacturers. South Africa's beneficiation is also dependent on energy-intensive stages of smelting and refining, which has been impacted by electricity prices as well as supply challenges. We also see mining equipment imports that have increased despite significant capability and competitiveness in this sector, a decline in technology R&D over the last 20 years, as well as transport and logistics challenges, where pricing, layout, as well as operations of logistics tends to favor the exports of raw materials, but expensive, inefficient, and inadequate for value-added goods. Then in terms of the reimagined industrial strategy, the objective is to improve R&D and technology development, increase exports and employment through the use of export taxes to support beneficiation and protect infrastructure, like in the case of scrap metal, improve policy coordination and certainty to unlock beneficiation opportunities, enhance our local manufacturing sector for platinum-based fuel cells, develop a local battery manufacturing industry, rejuvenate the iron ore and steel value chain, as well as the polymer value chain. Then in terms of policy interventions, the key objectives to address the challenges that I've raised is to ensure security of supply at competitive prices for local manufacturers. And here the policy and program levers are the Mineral Petroleum Resources Development Act, the Competition Commission, ITAC and National Treasury in terms of export taxes. The second objective is to support new investments with incentives and industrial finance through the IDC, as well as the DTIC incentives like Black Industrialist Programs and SEZs, which have been used to support a number of beneficiation projects, localization and supplier development through designations and the PPPFA, the DMRE mining charter, shareholder instructions and compacts, and then the BBBE codes. There's also a need to accelerate mining capital equipment exports, and here some of the initiatives are around export councils as well as export promotion initiatives. R&D and technology development through the Department of Science and Innovation technology support programs, as well as electricity, rail, and port tariffs through DPE and the DMRE, who is looking at the short and long-term framework for energy-intensive users and negotiated pricing agreements. The first area of beneficiation that the department is focusing on, together with stakeholders, other government departments, as well as the IDC, is platinum-based fuel cells. As you know, South Africa has more than 80% of the world's platinum reserves, together with other platinum group metals like rhodium and palladium. We have the largest platinum mining companies in South Africa. It's a very large employer, accounting for 175,000 jobs in the sector. It's also a very important export revenue generator for the country, and therefore there is a need to support the long-term sustainability and growth of the industry. It is threatened by the future decline in combustion engine vehicles and hence the need for new applications and markets for platinum group metals to transform our dependence on the current demand from catalytic converters. The objective in terms of the fuel cells program is to create a sustainable local manufacturing sector for platinum-based fuel cells and subcomponents. The opportunity for South Africa is really threefold: increasing PGM demand and mining growth, mineral beneficiation and manufacturing, and then the transition to cleaner energy. The roadmap that the department is following with other stakeholders is based on five key pillars. The first one is research, development, innovation, and skills development. This is largely led by the Department of Science and Innovation through their Hydrogen South Africa programs, where they lead human capital development and research and development through various centers focusing on catalysis systems and infrastructure. And the second one focuses on demonstration. Demonstration is key for an infant industry, especially to catalyze market adoption and development. Here, the department has been focusing on key projects together with mining companies. And some of the key ones is the 100-kilowatt demonstration at the Chamber of Mines, as well as others, using incentives like SPI, the Support Program for Industrial Innovation, the Critical Infrastructure Fund, as well as the Special Economic Zone incentives. In terms of early market adoption and development, there are efforts to secure demand by both the public and the private sector in transport and mining applications. In terms of investment, we are engaging with fuel cell manufacturers for localization in South Africa. Also, infrastructure and gas availability is key for the rollout of fuel cells, and the Springs Industrial Park linked to the Gauteng IDZ provides benefit of being close to refineries, having access to metal, recycling, transport, as well as exports. These are some of the key fuel cell focus areas as well as projects. In terms of the first one, focuses on telecommunications and rural applications. South Africa has over 300 units deployed at Vodacom off-grid sites. We currently have the second largest deployment of fuel cells in telecoms in the world, which has the potential to grow. There's also potential in sub-Saharan Africa with more than 60 million households in terms of rural applications. Here, key projects that are well underway for development include fuel cell manufacturing facilities, in Dube Trade Port to service the existing Vodacom sites as well as new telco customers. And this plant is expected to be in development and be established in 2020, which is this year. The project is supported by the Critical Infrastructure Program. We also have other projects related to commercialization of fuel cell membranes and catalysts, which is supported by the National Industrial Participation Program as well as the Critical Infrastructure Program. In terms of mobility, which is the second focus area, this is in applications in buses, trucks, and mining equipment. This is the most realistic market for early adoption. Fuel cells offer a technical advantage for heavy vehicles to extend the range of electric vehicles. It is also cost comparable over the long term. And projects and programs that we are pursuing is the Green Hydrogen Transport Program together with the DBSA and IDC, which is looking at a large-scale demonstration of heavy trucks on the N3 corridor. There's also transportation initiatives by the mines, as well as a local bus company developing a hybrid solution battery with a fuel cell range extender for buses. There is a roadmap in collaboration with Gautrain who have purchased these buses that can be retrofitted with a battery and fuel cell system. Then moving on to the second beneficiation area, this is on energy storage and local battery manufacturing. As I indicated, mineral-based green energy solutions are gaining momentum, which is driven by the global response to climate change and greenhouse gas commitments. South Africa and the region has significant resources of minerals like vanadium, lithium, cobalt, manganese, and others that are sought after in the battery materials market. A number of projects are being pursued by government, the IDC, and industry, and the focus areas is, again, on the mobility applications given the demand, as well as stationary and backup utility applications. The three focus areas is vanadium redox flow batteries, nickel sulfate for lithium ion batteries, as well as manganese precursors for lithium ion batteries. Two key projects that I'd like to mention that goes all the way from mine through to precursor development to final manufacturing of batteries is starts with an 8 million liter vanadium electrolyte manufacturing plant in the East London IDZ, supported by the IDC. The plant will process vanadium oxide from South Africa as well as use other locally manufactured reagents. The plan is to start production by the end of 2020, and the output from this plant will be the precursor for vanadium redox flow batteries. The company is involved in the entire value chain. And then the second one is the 25,000 ton per annum pure nickel sulfate plant supported by the Black Industrialist Program. The plant will process nickel byproduct from a platinum mine producing battery grade material in Brits, Northwest for the export market. It is a Mintec proprietary process, and the construction of the plant is also expected to commence this year or early next year. Other beneficiation projects that are useful to note is manganese precursors. South Africa also has a significant endowment of manganese. And here there are two projects, an existing company that beneficiates ore and supplies local steel mills and the global battery market, and then the potential to establish a battery manufacturing facility in the Kuga IDZ. On titanium, there is a planned titanium dioxide pigment plant in Richards Bay IDZ, supported by the DTIC Critical Infrastructure Program. The plant will produce 80,000 tons per annum of titanium dioxide pigment for local and export markets, utilizing the Highveld stockpile discarded material. Construction of the pigment manufacturing plant will commence in 2022. And South Africa, again, has the second largest resources of titanium in the world. In terms of rare earths, IDC, in collaboration with Mintec, is undertaking a mine-to-magnet value chain pre-feasibility study for the manufacturing of rare earth magnets in South Africa for the global automotive market. Then on mining equipment, as I mentioned, there's strong backward and forward linkages, high levels of value add, as well as productivity levels. It is also a labor-intensive subsector. South African firms are competitive. They have significant capabilities and exports in mineral processing, off-road equipment, pumps, valves, and conveyor systems. SADC also produces two-thirds of Africa's mineral exports, and South Africa's mining sector is the largest on the continent. We have seen significant imports that have grown from 2009 to 2018. We imported $3.5 billion of mining and machinery equipment, and there are interventions to replace imports and focus on localization and supplier development. There's also cluster development programs as well as local content verification, and an export roadmap. Then in terms of rejuvenating the steel value chain, as you know, steel is fundamental to manufacturing. The value chain is central to any industrialization path and is a key driver of competitiveness with inputs into sectors like mining, construction, automotives, and capital equipment. The reimagined industrial strategy has prioritized the steel value chain. Since 2015 and the global steel crisis, which is characterized by huge excess capacity, imports, limited export markets, as well as current weak demand, there are a number of interventions that the department, as well as what other government departments have put in place. These include designations and localization. All major steel-intensive products have been designated under the PPPFA. There's also additional localization potential in rail, water, and mining projects, and the Highveld rail capability to supply mainline rail. There's the Steel Competitiveness Fund, established in 2017, to support key downstream sectors in distress, working capital, as well as upgrading requirements. There's the SARS reference price system, an interagency working group established to tackle illegal trade and low-priced and under-invoiced imports of steel. Flat steel pricing agreement in 2017. Then trade policy, tariffs, and trade remedy support, both for the primary steel industry as well as downstream products. And in order to maintain strategic capability, the Highveld steel intervention, which saved a major industrial complex, and interventions with respect to SCORE to maintain strategic capability in primary steel grinding media for mining and construction, as well as rail. A key intervention is the proposed export tax on scrap metal. Government has and continues to put in place measures to support the beneficiation and availability of affordable scrap to foundries and mills. A price preference system administered by ITAC has been in place since 2013, regulating the exportation of ferrous and non-ferrous scrap. There is also a commitment to an export tax. An independent impact assessment was done and recommended its implementation. The export tax was announced by the Minister of Finance during the 2020 budget speech, and implementation modalities are being finalized, including public consultation, which has been delayed due to the COVID-19 pandemic, and ultimately the consultation, the second phase, will commence with the publication of the Taxation Laws Amendment Bill. In terms of the master plan process, we continue to partner with labor and industry in the development of the master plan and social compact. The first phase is expected to be completed within this financial year. It aims to support the medium to long-term growth, development, and sustainability of the value chain. The focus is on a turnaround action-orientated plan based on identified competitiveness improvements, measures to increase demand, reduce levels of imports, and reposition the industry to be resilient under intense global pressures. Through the master plan process, action plans and reciprocal commitments will be secured and implemented with business and labor in stages, in order to move with urgency to support growth and job retention. Then lastly, the polymer beneficiation value chain. In South Africa, Sasol produces polymers, polypropylene and polyethylene, from natural gas and coal. These are beneficiated into plastics and widely used in a number of sectors. Key projects are the polypropylene compounding facility, which will be supplying Volkswagen, the designation of plastic pipes late last year, localization of essential PPEs like body bags, biohazard bags, face shields and aprons, a new fuel tank manufacturing for Mercedes-Benz, polypropylene beneficiation applications in other sectors, and there are studies underway by IDC and Sasol looking into this. Then the draft plastics master plan is also expected to be completed within this financial year, which will include a social compact and interventions with SARS and industry to deal with misdeclarations and under-invoicing. Then in terms of some concluding remarks, in various minerals, the stages of value addition vary in technology, capital, and energy intensity, as well as know-how and product markets. Each stage can provide enormous advantages in the forward linkages, contributing to building a dynamic and competitive manufacturing sector. To fully leverage the opportunities, we must create an enabling environment through supportive policy and legislative regimes in terms of energy, transport, trade policies, as well as targeted industrial financing support. Beneficiation embodies a long-term program that requires a committed private sector with developmental interests to invest for the long haul. Thank you.
Can we then welcome and accept the report? And I would actually then suggest if ever there are any comments, questions, clarity, and from the honourable members. So we are at the part where we can be able to then interact with the report presented. Can I open up the floor to honourable members, Secretariat? Do you have any?
Chair, I have a list, Chair.
Okay.
Mr. Cuthbert, Chair.
Okay. Cuthbert.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and my apologies for being late. Just a and questions in sync. Chair, there's some background noise. Can everyone just place themselves on mute?
Continue.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chair, just the first point I'd like to raise is obviously AMSA acquired Highveld Steel for 300 million rand back in February. And one could say that this kind of, excuse me, this would have reduced competition in the steel market, which is the actual problem, is the fact that a monopoly has been created by this department as well as government at large for AMSA through export tariffs and the like, and yet they are shedding jobs. I see there's another announcement this morning saying that they're going to be shedding jobs once again, and they need to reprioritize. We saw in January with Saldana Steel, and I'm just not understanding why this department and government at large continues to provide them with the kind of protection they do when they obviously do not stick to the promises that they make in terms of job creation and also job sustainability in the medium to long term. So just to get some clarity from the department on what their position is on this particular matter, they seem to list this as a strategic intervention. It seems to me to be collusion between the department as well as the, you know, big steel in this country to block out small competitors in the industry. The second comment question I'd like to make, Chairperson, is regarding an email that I sent through to the RTAC Commissioner, and I CC'd the Director General in as well, and that is regarding the scrap metal permits, which have not been new permits have not been reissued since March. And as you would understand, currency fluctuation means that there is obviously a drastic change in price, and obviously with the COVID pandemic, this has wreaked havoc on this particular industry. So why have there not been new permits that have been issued in this particular regard, and what is being done to assist the ailing scrap metal industry in itself? Then thirdly, Chairperson, I'm sure you'd be aware of this particular project being from Ekurhuleni yourself, the Aerotropolis. There's a large beneficiation component to this particular project regarding particularly a diamond refinery that is located close to OR Tambo International Airport. And this has been, you know, in the works for several years now, and apparently operations had commenced in 2015, 2016. And does this form part of the DTIC's beneficiation mandate? And could they give us any kind of progress report in that regard as to how successful this project is thus far and whether or not it has carried out its intended benefits towards the local economy of Ekurhuleni? Thank you, Chairperson.
Okay, can we take the next one, Andre?
Chair, Ms. Yaku, Chair.
Honorable Yaku.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'll be very brief with mine. I thank you for the presentation from the department. I am concerned, however, that the main aim is employment, as job creation. And as far as our minerals are concerned, I don't feel that we have worked hard enough to make sure that our people benefit most from the minerals that we have. And I hear of strategies, I hear of strategic plans, I hear all those things, but when? It seems to me that, especially now when there's a lot of job cuts, we should have been in a place where we have contingency plans to create jobs from the minerals that we have. And I'd like to ask the department, what timelines with their strategies do they have that they can be honest about and say, you know, we want to go fully locally made products. We don't want to outsource anymore our work. We want to by this time, so that our children can also have a plan for themselves as to what do they study, what do they do, do they have hope, or are we basically just going to outsource all our strengths and our steel and our minerals away? Thank you.
Okay, Andre, the next member.
Chair, Ms. Mantashe, Chair.
Honorable Mantashe.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I have a few questions. I appreciate the presentation, but really, Chair, we must voice our concern about the silence in the presentation of how many jobs do they think they're going to create in all the projects they are mentioning here, because we have seen the number of jobs lost in those platinum mines that they are boasting about. But the presentation doesn't say we will counter that by establishing so many jobs in the IDZs they are mentioning here, because we understand very well that this COVID-19 crisis also is coming with a bloodbath of job losses. We will be happy to hear how many jobs do they think the projects they are boasting about are going to create. Chairperson, we, in one oversight visit to the companies of the black industrialists that have been established by DTI, which we are happy about, we have observed that South Africans do not place orders. They don't give business to those black industrialists. So at which point is that going to be stopped so that South African companies use local products, force them to use local products, Chairperson? When will this export of scrap metal be stopped? Because it creates problems, Chairperson. It takes out the scrap metal, which we know that it uses less energy in manufacturing, but to continue to let it get out of the country. It has not changed since the last time we've been listening to this song, but it doesn't stop. And we suspect that there's also some scrap metal that goes out of the country unnoticed without being detected by all who are at our borders. Chairperson, we also want to understand, yes, we know that the department has some stakeholders like the other departments, your minerals and energy and science and technology. At which point are they going to integrate their work so that when they present to us, they say, we have decided to do this and this and this with these other departments? Thank you, Chairperson, because we are tired of this by the work they do, that is not seamless. It delays progress of the country. Thank you, Chairperson.
Well, next member, Honorable Anderson.
Chair, Mr. McPherson, Chair.
Honorable McPherson.
Thanks so much. You know, when I was watching the presentation presented to me, I was convinced that the only thing that has changed in that presentation is the date over the last 6 years. Because for the last 6 years, the department has been saying exactly the same thing. Nothing has changed. So I'm being interrupted.
Someone will have to mute. Okay, McPherson, continue.
You know, nothing has changed. There's no new ideas. We're still talking about banning scrap metals. We're still talking about downstream beneficiation. We're still talking about mine gate prices. It's actually unbelievable. And I will say the only difference that the department has noted, and this is the big difference, is that it all comes down to policy and legislation. Now, the policy and legislation that underpins all of this is the MPRDA and the Freedom Charter, both which have been rejected by every single business in the sector. And yet we keep scratching our heads and wondering why mines are closing down, why jobs are being lost, why there's no beneficiation taking place, because the legislation and policies of the government simply do not make it economically viable. And until someone in the department and other departments and the government gets it into their heads that you cannot just suck jobs out of the air, and that unless there is an enabling environment and unless the MPRDA and mining charter is scrapped, then nothing is going to change. The reason why businesses import all of these goods is because they are cheaper, and B, that there is no business that is making it in South Africa, and that's because the market is just simply not big enough. And by the department's own admission, we account for 1%, one whole percent of mining production globally. So unless we are able to ramp up and increase our total percentage of mining production as a contributor to the entire global mining production, there is no hope in hell that we are going to produce anything in South Africa. So really, there needs to be a total and complete reset in terms of legislation, in terms of policy, and in terms of actually understanding what the realities are in South Africa for anything to change. And that's what I'm looking for, actually. That's what I was hoping for in the presentation, for an admittance that nothing is working and actually they need to go back and start from scratch. So I'd love to know from the department how they actually plan to square this round hole that is the failing mining sector when it is underpinned by bad legislation and bad policy. Thank you.
Thank you. Can we take the next member, Honorable?
Chair, Mr. Honorable Mulder, Chair.
Honorable Mulder.
Thank you, Chair. I've got two questions just with the following background. As far as policy context is concerned and the key policies driving beneficiation, this indeed looks like, seems to be a very positive document setting the table for the future. But I agree with Honorable McPherson that it is not intact with reality. The real situation in South Africa looks different, and if one really wants to implement this, one should be realistic. I've got two questions. The first question is, could the department please elaborate on the role of the DTIC in this policy driving and beneficiation situation. Mention is being made on bullet 5 under policy interventions. I just want to ask if it's only those mentioned there, because if that is a fact, it is very basic. So please elaborate on the role, the actual role that the DTIC will have in the future in beneficiation. And then the second question is, unfortunately, the department has got not a very happy future as far as bad policies, state capture and corruption is concerned. My question is, which way did state capture influence the DTIC's ability to play a role in beneficiation? And if so, what measures have been taken to change it? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Munda. The next member, Secretary.
Chair, Mr. Thring, Chair.
Honourable Thring.
Thank you, Chair. I think firstly, we want to appreciate the presentation and the information that has been submitted to us and this portfolio committee. But Chair, let me go straight then into my comments and questions. Firstly, slide 5 indicates that we have some 2.5 trillion of mineral reserves. That may be a portion of it, because the last time I checked, it was closer to $5 trillion of mineral reserves. And that speaks into the next aspect on slide 6, where I think Councillor Member Honourable McPherson indicated 1% of, it's actually 1% of global exploration is what we have. Now, if we have some $5 trillion, or call it $2.5 trillion worth of mineral reserves, but only 1% of global exploration expenditure taking place in South Africa, certainly there's an imbalance, and that needs to be corrected. I also think, Chair, that the comparative advantage that we have on slide 7, I'm sorry if there's a noise, it's my neighbors upstairs that are doing some renovations. I've just moved into a new apartment.
Okay.
So, the slide 7 is the comparative advantage that we currently have must be turned into a competitive advantage. And I think clearly the presenter indicated that we need to address the policy as well as the legislative challenges that we have. But this is policy and legislative uncertainty, because for as long as there's policy and legislative uncertainty, there's going to be no investment, and we'll continue to see just 1% of global exploration expenditure in the mining sector in South Africa. Then, Chair, slide 9 speaks about the acceleration of mining capital equipment exports. That, I think, speaks to slide 15. Slide 15 talks about $35 billion of billion dollars of mining equipment imported by South Africa. Now clearly we have some of the largest mineral reserves in the world, and yet we should be beneficiating. And where we should be looking at our supply value chains, we are still importing to the tune of $35 billion worth of equipment for the mining sector. Chair, that's just inexcusable. And it's certainly poor planning. I had this particular debate with Honorable Zweli Mkhize when he was running for the premiership here in KwaZulu-Natal. And I pointed out that beneficiation is not working, and it's not working because of poor policies and the lack of implementation. He nodded his head, but then went on to defend the policies, obviously, of his party, which is understandable. But, Chair, that was some 20 years maybe ago where we had this debate. And I think that we've got to stop talking about the challenges that we have ad nauseum, and we have to look at rectifying those particular challenges. Where we have 80% of the world's platinum reserves, and yet, Chair, we remain price takers. Now, our price takers, where you have no choice. We are price takers, for example, of fuel, because we don't, you know, we import most of our fuel, so we are price taker in that sense. But why is it that when it comes to, you know, where we have the largest reserves of minerals, we continue to be price takers in those particular areas? I want to ask on slide 12, SSA greater than 16 million households. It just didn't make sense to me, and I wasn't able to read that. So could the presenter please, just on slide 12, it's got SAA greater than 60 million households. What is that? Chair, and then finally, I think my last statement would be that research and development for titanium and other minerals is going to be important, because much like what Sasol has done with their polymers and with the byproducts, they're actually using that to make plastics and so on, and it's generating lots of income, it's generating making lots of jobs. But for as long as we are cutting short our research and development section, we are not going to see the benefit of other byproducts from the huge mineral resources that we actually have. And then, Chair, I think maybe, sorry, finally then, I think my comment also is much similar to the other members. I am not seeing jobs. I'm not seeing how many jobs have been created via beneficiation, because this is what it's really about. It's about creating employment for our people. Like one of the countries in the Baltic states where they found oil reserves, the members of that particular nation benefited. How are our people benefiting from these huge reserves that South Africa has? We continue to be consumers rather than producers. And if for as long as we are consuming, and we're just consuming what other nations import to us, export to us, we are not going to make headway, Chair. I would like to see also a calendar of all of the, or a program, a schedule of all of the minerals that we are going to be beneficiating. When is that going to be taking place? How many jobs are going to be created?
Thank you.
So that's kind of timeline, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you. Hey, I forgot the 3 minutes, Honorable Kling. Okay. Then the next member.
Chair. Chair, Mr. Vuyani said he's covered, so there's no further questions, Chair.
Okay. May I, DDG, pick up on the issues which were raised, DDG Pele?
Chair?
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I would like to put an apology. I battled to hear the questions. So can I request my colleagues to start with the responses, and then we will see how we help each other in the process. So I will ask Humisha to start, and then we will make sure that we respond as much as possible to all the matters that have been raised. So Humisha, can you start, please? And okay. Deboho, you will chip in.
Thanks. I will start on the first questions. In terms of AMSA acquiring Highveld, the Highveld structural mill, when Highveld went into business rescue, it included the iron plants, and which were not in production. So in order to get feed material for the structural mill, AMSA has the Newcastle plant, which produces billet. So in order to save the structural mill, utilizing the existing capability in the country, the AMSA Highveld fit was a good fit in terms of capability and competitiveness, given that they did have the input material to continue with the structural mill, which produces key structures for construction, as well as for the rail sector. Then in terms of the questions on scrap metal and the export permits, as you know, in terms of the PPS, the process is that the scrap dealers have to first offer the scrap to the local consumers. Given the pandemic and the shortages of scrap, due to low levels of economic activity, there was a shortage of scrap metal after the lockdown period, as well as the mills and the foundries did not have adequate time to make offers for the scrap metal when the notifications were released by ITAC, and hence there was a request for an extension to give them an opportunity to make offers on the grade and qualities of scrap that would be required. But currently, there is a process to start up the PPS again and to issue permits for scrap metal that is not required by the foundries and the mills. Then in terms of the question on the diamond refinery in the IDZ, I do not know. We will have to follow up with the Gauteng IDZ in terms of what is the progress on that project, and we will get back to the committee in terms of the status of that. In terms of the second question, set of questions on what are the opportunities for beneficiation, how do we add value to our minerals? As I indicated in the slides, you would see that two key focus areas of beneficiation that government is pursuing is energy storage and fuel cells. And this is really because of the demand and the global response to greenhouse gas commitments as well as climate change. And there's a real demand for these minerals and metals. And South Africa, as well as the region, is in a good position because we are endowed with many of the minerals that are needed for this. So in terms of opportunities, those are definitely two key opportunities that are growing in technology advanced sectors and sectors that are growing globally in terms of demand and where South Africa is well placed to export metals, precursors, as well as final products into this market. Then on the question in terms of jobs, the numbers that I do have are the titanium project that I mentioned. The anticipated job number is 1,300. In terms of the nickel project, this is not a very job-intensive project and plant, so that only will have 60 jobs. Then on Vametco and the vanadium project, that is about 700 jobs. Where a key job-intensive sector in terms of beneficiation is mining equipment. And if we are able to replace 1 billion rands worth of imports, it equates to 2,000 jobs. And as I indicated, there is significant imports that can be replaced. So this is a subsector that has significant job opportunities. Then in terms of the question on coordination with other government departments, the department does work closely with all government departments, the Department of Science and Innovation, as well as public enterprises, transport, including the IDC, as well as the DBSA, and all the projects and programs that were mentioned is a collaborative effort, bringing in policy interventions as well as leaders from different government departments and agencies in terms of financing and support that can be offered. Then the question on policy and legislation, the challenges and the coordination. Yes, we do acknowledge that, and it was in the presentation. We do need policy certainty as well as improved policy and legislative coordination in terms of policies being driven by different government departments. And that is a key area that we are focusing on. It has also been identified in the reimagined industrial strategy. Then in terms of the DTIC actual roles, the DTIC is focusing on the implementation of projects and programs aligned to the reimagined industrial strategy. Our policy levers include designation, the BBBE codes and act, trade policy support, as well as our interventions with SARS through the illicit trade and illegal imports. Then the final set of questions was related to on the question on slide 12 on what does the SSA 60 million households mean. This is the potential for fuel cells application in rural applications, in the rural household applications. The telecommunications fuel cells as well as the rural application is a similar application, and there is potential in terms of sub-Saharan Africa of about 60 million households. R&D is key, and we are working closely with the Department of Science and Innovation to bolster R&D and technology development programs that are really focused on industrial development and have commercialization outcomes with respect to beneficiation. I think I'm not sure if I've left out any questions, but those are the responses and answers provided. Thank you.
Thank you, Misha. Dr. Teboho Makube, can you please assist on some of the questions that are not responded to, and followed by Claudie on potential jobs that could be accrued on some of those projects that we are doing on polymer beneficiation, working particularly with the automotive sector. Deval?
Yeah, thank you very much, and good morning, members. Just to, you know, try to answer some of the questions raised regarding the role of the DTIC in the whole debate around mineral beneficiation. I think as the department over the years, we have raised the issue of beneficiation that being important in resolving some of the economic challenges we have in the country. And we do acknowledge that we are not the main department that is driving minerals policy in the country. But obviously, because of the linkages between mining and other sectors of the economy, in particular manufacturing, it is critical that the department plays a role, because there are linkages, forward and backward linkages between mining and manufacturing in South Africa. And critical to that is that if you look at what we export as the country, mainly it's about 50% of what we export is about minerals, right? So, and those minerals are unprocessed. It's not sustainable for the country because we are losing value. And manufacturing to a particular extent is also not performing, because the global demand on certain minerals has declined, which is affecting the South African economy. Now, to scale up demand internally, you know, we need then to beneficiate, and it takes time. It's not only about the development of certain minerals. It's also about the global demand and the structure of the industries. It's not all bad. I am frustrated if PGM group matters. In there, you look at the demand for palladium, you look at the demand for rhodium. You'll see that the auto industry generally, because it's moving towards the cleaner fuels and so forth, there's been a huge demand for those minerals, in particular rhodium and palladium, and that has had positive benefits in South Africa. So you look at Sibanye-Stillwater,
All right. Its share price, even today, is up by 1.6%. All right. Over the past 5 years, the share price has been up by 72%. And the past year is 1.31%. Abu Dhabi has taken over Lone Mean and has been able to pay off its debt before time, mainly because of the positive returns in the demand for PGMs, in particular rhodium and palladium. That has had positive effects in the country in terms of the fiscals that are coming through. And also jobs that, yes, we are losing, but Sibanye is doing well. Impala Platinum is doing well. So those minerals are critical for us. And now the linkages to the autos industry, you know, the auto industry development program that this country is having, and the program to scale up local, it will have positive effect on the demand for those minerals, particularly as we move towards the cleaner fuel. So other minerals are, we have challenges. We know that there's been our production of gold is declining, but as Umisha is saying, there are other opportunities. You know, the fuel cells, the batteries, development is still at the lowest level. We need to move up on that. We have made our submission on the mining charter. We have put emphasis on local procurement. I know that there's a legal challenge in the matter, but if you look at our view, we have said the importation of mining equipment is a problem for South Africa. It's not only affecting the mining sector. It also affects our trade balance. It affects our balance of payment. So it is important that we do something around the beneficiation of the mining equipment. And we are engaging the mining sector in identifying the equipment that can be manufactured in the country to deal with challenges, not only of job creation, but also of lessening the challenges we have with regards to the trade balance and other problems that we have on the international trade side. So our view is that we also want to export, you know, because other resources are being discovered in African countries, and there is a need for mining equipment there. So there is an opportunity for South African companies, if we do beneficiate, to also export some of the equipment. So stakeholder management, and we like the comments that are coming from committee members, but it will be helpful for us to get guidance as to which policy areas we can amplify in making sure that we resolve the critical challenges of jobs, the critical challenges of low economic growth, because in essence, South Africa is a resource-based economy. But what I would like to take and guidance from the committee is that in the policies that you think, which areas we can focus on and be held accountable in making sure that we reform them and implement in conjunction with other departments that are leading in this area. That is my addition. Thanks.
Thank you, Teboho. Claudie, would you like to come in on the polymer value chain?
Sure. Good morning, everybody. Hi. So I'd just like to talk a bit about the work that's been done in on the polymer beneficiation. Umisha, my colleague, has touched on the areas that we're focusing on, such as the compounding facility. I'm just going to touch briefly on those to supply Volkswagen in South Africa. And the others is then looking at new fuel tank manufacturing. The reason for me raising this is that the plastics area is really a sector for that's labor intensive. And there's opportunities here that we can piggyback on. As plastics has really revolutionized the design of the cars going forward. And so looking at a quick glance, when we look at what's available already from it nationally in terms of funding, we look at our support that has been put already into the automotive sector. So I'd also like to touch on the 60% local content that we're aiming for that provides a platform to deepen then the auto value chain and to integrate the local plastic component manufacturers into the space, and also then looking at the regional and the global value chain. So also just briefly to mention, we have seen in the media companies are in trouble in terms of job losses. We look at Sasol's announcement yesterday in terms of cutting jobs. And so this will obviously impact on the work going forward. We are trying to support companies using what we have available in terms of instruments, in terms of resources, so that we can see how we can better then create this high growth potential in terms of jobs for the plastics industry. So at the moment, we're focusing then on the compounding and from a components point of view, because we do believe there's opportunities there based on what we can do at the moment on the ground. The other a huge project I'd also like to mention that we're busy with in terms of polypropylene beneficiation is working closely with Sasol. So we're then looking at non-wovens. We're also looking at, for example, to mention a project that can possibly take off in the country. If you look at your washing machines and you look at the drum, it's traditionally it's been comprised of steel components, and then we're now looking at possibly an opportunity for using polypropylene beneficiation to substitute this into the washing machine, so that we can then, it will be cheaper, it will be lighter, it will be more accessible, affordable for the rural areas. So this is, for example, this is a project that's been taken off in Brazil. We look at Brazil as one of our counterparts areas, countries, and to see what they've done in terms of beneficiation of polypropylene, and to, so we're basically trying to copy the model that they had over there. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Claudie. Chair, would you allow me to add a couple of points on my side? It's Tandip again, and I would like to really apologize for the connection and the sound problem. Going forward, we'll make sure that we are able to deal with these issues prior to the committee meeting. I think maybe as a way of starting on my part, I want to pick up on the point that Umisha made towards the end of the presentation about the level of intensity of different variables within or along the mineral value chain. I think we all have to recognize that at least the first stages of beneficiation are very energy intensive. They are very transport intensive because generally it's very bulk materials. They are very technology intensive, and hence the importance for us to actually concentrate on what can we really localize realistically on a mining equipment side to ensure that the side stream that arises out of mining activities provides some opportunities for local manufacturing, especially in the mining side, mining equipment side. So I think over the past 10 years, we have seen a competitive advantage of our smelters been eroded due to increase in electricity pricing, instability of electricity supply. And I think these issues that we need to be very acute to, that value addition across the entire mineral value chain has been affected by a number of factors, as we've been implementing in different types of policy instruments. We have always come to the committee and made a plea for greater support for downstream because that's where greater levels of jobs can be accrued. Honorable Mantashe made the point about the export of scrap metal. For the honorable members that have been part of the committee for the longest time would recall that as the, when we first launched the Industrial Policy Action Plan, we have always spoken about the need to cap the export of scrap as a way to actually increase beneficiation and reduce reliance at least on the traditional minerals, because the scrap, it's got properties that are that can present much more competitive advantages to the local beneficiators. So there are elements in our policy instrument tools that we have really tried to sharpen along the way, although we have in some areas we they've been counter affected by some of the factors that have arisen, e.g. the electricity pricing issue. It is an issue in the mineral beneficiation value chains because to beneficiate is a very intensive, energy-intensive process. We continue to be in engagement with our sister departments, particularly Department of Mineral Resources and Energy, around how do we better utilize the mining charter and the MPRDA and the energy policy for that matter, to ensure that this, our strategy around beneficiation can really accrue real benefits to the economy. Umisha spoke about short-term electricity pricing and long-term electricity pricing framework as a means in which we are saying to the department, our sister department, that if we were to make a difference into this space, we need to find a way of utilizing our electricity as a key tool of industrial policy. And I mean, if the honorable members would recall that establishment of, example, the aluminium smelters, it was at the back of very concessional electricity pricing that were given at the time. Yes, we're in a different era where we had abundance of electricity supply, so we could afford cheaper electricity prices. Honorable Mantashe also raised the issues around how do we better integrate the black industrialists into the value chain. And for me, it's the importance of going further into the downstream activities, because in the downstream activities, at least the barriers of entry are much lower. The capital requirements or the capital outlay, at least in the sum of the mineral value chains, are a bit lower. So it's a bit easier to actually integrate the black industrialists into the more value-added parts of the value chains. But indeed, issues of demand becomes an issue because if you have built a factory, it needs to be sustained at the back of consistent orders that are coming and feeding into the factory. And I think the issues that are being presented by the global pandemic are very real. If we characterize the world today, the global economy is very uncertain. We have seen shrinking demand, global demand. We are seeing a lot of protectionism policies being implemented by different states. We are seeing a lot of concentration by the national states for localization because everybody is trying to preserve their local capabilities and local manufacturing. So therefore, we need to look for new areas of growth. Our traditional markets are slowly shrinking, although in some pockets we are seeing a bit of growth, like for example, the example that Umisha and Devo spoke about, the greening in the auto sectors. Provides a new opportunities to penetrate the, for example, the Europe market, provided that our OEM and our component manufacturers are also able to reorientate their production in order to ensure that we are able to meet the greenhouse requirements that are being put forward by the EU. So for me, I think there's a greater focus also to look at the continent, because generally in the number of mineral value chains, we're producing products that are still very much suitable for developing countries, like, for example, construction materials, piping materials, and so forth. So we need to find a way of nudging through the continental free trade area to ensure that we are able to sustain some of the capabilities we have developed locally for exports onto the continent. obviously it wouldn't come as South Africa producing and the continent only consuming. We also need to look at equitable integration with our sister countries on the continent to show that we are all industrializing at least at the same pace, because they also have the issues of minerals that are being exported unbeneficiated. So we need to find ways of partnerships with our sister department, sister countries on the continent, to ensure that we are able to industrialize and integrate our economies much more effectively. I think the issues, I mean, we have seen, I think Honorable Nelda raised the issues about state capture and the influence on beneficiation. I think we have seen the painful lessons of state capture, particularly in the procurement, on some of the large procurement transactions of the state. And it could be that also there is some elements in the beneficiation side that also needs to be looked at. The state capture has really crippled the manner in which we are able to develop as a collective, as a country. So on some of the issues on, I think it's Honorable Cuthbert, I think on your questions around the diamond refinery, I think let's undertake to come back to you with written response on that. I think we need to follow up with our colleagues that are running the SEZ and the Industrial Park programs, and we'll come back to you with a bit of firmer details on that. I think some of the points that Honorable McPherson has raised around policy coherence and legislation, I think it's been issues that we have come to the committee to also appraise the committee on. I think the issues on MPRDA and the mining charter, to be honest, as officials of the DTI, we are unable to give a firm commitment on how are these issues going to be resolved. But we are aware that the department itself, DMRE, is engaging with the mining industry, is engaging with the mineral council to find a way of ensuring that some of the issues that have been raised on the legislation itself are being worked on. So we will continue to do what within the mandate of the DTI we are able to put forward. I think we have utilized the instruments equitably across all value chains. Obviously, the manner, the suite of the support measures will differ from value chain to value chain. Some value chains require more demand. Hence, we engage with the mining industry, for example, on the mining equipment. Some value chains require more of a trade support, and we have continued to deploy our tariff instruments, our trade remedy instruments. So the mixture of the instruments will differ from one value chain to one value chain. But we remain very committed to supporting downstream activities, because we, especially in the current economic climate where jobs are being shared, we need to find a way that we are cushioning the manufacturing sector and we are cushioning the vulnerable to ensure that at least the job losses do not affect the population to that great extent. Thanks, Chair. I will end there.
We will actually then request that we proceed to the next part, Secretariat.
Yes,
I think we will ask that we take the next presentation. If ever there are gaps and there are issues raised, we will actually try and follow through. Please actually help us just to move to the second presentation, and then we'll actually follow the same procedure in terms of questions for clarity and comments from members. Can we take the next presentation, Secretariat? If we can actually screen that, DDG.
Yes, Dr. Makube will share his presentation, Chair.
Okay. Thank you. Dr. Makube will take us through the presentation.
Yes. Thank you, Chair. The presentation is on the local content policy stroke designation. So when I talk about local content designation, I mean the same thing. So my understanding is that we have to brief the committee on the measures we have taken to ensure compliance and verification. So the presentation then will take will brief basically I'll brief members on give the background on the policy giving rise to local content, the list of designated products, the implementation of local content, in particular relation to the procurement of personal protective equipment and also compliance in relation to that. And lastly, it will be the challenges that we are facing and the work that we are doing to resolve those challenges. Now, as you know, local content, it's a legislative requirement in South Africa, in line with the 2017 preferential procurement regulation. So basically, it started on the 7th of December in 2011. So those regulations gave rise to local content, but they were amended in 2017. And Chapter 8 or Regulation 8 of the 2017 Preferential Procurement Regulation deals with local content. So as the DTIC now, we derive our powers to designate products for local production through Regulation 8.1. So it's the minister of the DTIC who has the powers to designate. And then 8.2 is very clear that where there is designation, organs of state to not have a choice but to implement local content in their invitation of bids or tenders. National Treasury will then issue the instruction notes on call them circulars, but you'll see that when we started they were called instruction notes. Regulation 8.4 provides an opportunity for organs of state to self-designate where a product is not yet designated. So if they go and procure, for instance, face shields now or goggles, those are not designated, but then 8.4 can be invoked where there is capability in the country to manufacture those products, but organs of state can invoke and support local manufacturing. Now, 8.5, it's where bidders are failing to meet local content requirements, so the bid should not be accepted. All right, it's very clear. It's not the policy of the DTI. So this is law, no. And departments do not have a choice whether to implement it or not. It's not the policy of the DTI per se, but it's law in the country. Now, what then we have done is that we, since 2011, we have designated about 27 products over the 8 years. The first instruction notes were issued in July 2012. So the slide shows how many that the first instruction notes. So there we have about 7. And over the years, we have been issuing additional instruction notes. And if you look at 2016-2017, you'll see there that we have Willy Pins. It is this committee that asked the DTI to intervene because municipalities were now giving tenders to people who were importing Willy Pins from foreign countries. And the committee asked the DTIC to intervene, and we did intervene by designating Willy Pins and protecting local manufacturers. And we have continued to do that. We are continuing to do that. We are adding products as we move along. This slide is similar to that one, but it then provides more details. If you look at the rows and the columns there, you'll see that the first column, it provides the list of products that are designated, and the second column, the LC threshold, the local content thresholds, it provides the minimum thresholds for local production. And the last one is the date in which the instruction notes or circulars came into effect. So the local content thresholds, what it means is that you see there the rail rolling stock is about 65%, and power pylons, number five, the textile, 100%. So we don't allow imports. So if there's any material that needs to be imported where a product or site has designated at 100%, bidders must approach the DTI for an exemption letter to import the material so that local content or non-local production can take place. So the only sector that doesn't have, or product that doesn't have minimum threshold there is number eight, pharmaceutical products, where we have agreed with the Department of Health that we will then come up with measures for local content on a tender-by-tender basis, mainly because of security of supply in terms of medicines, and also the global debates around the intellectual property rights, whether South African companies have those rights or are licensed to manufacture, including the active pharmaceutical ingredients. So those are the challenges that we have in the system. But yes, as the tenders come along, we do meet with the department. We have met with Department of Health and Treasury before on the ARVs, the oral solid dosage for family planning. So some of the tenders, the volumes have been given to South African manufacturers. So the last note, number 27, was for lead acid batteries. And in the previous, it has been by the batteries manufactured. Now, with regards to PPE, the National Treasury has issued the instruction note to all organs of state that bidders have to comply to local content. So there are two processes in which tenders are adjudicated or advertised. So the National Treasury manages some transversal tenders. As you know, not all departments are compelled to participate in transversal tenders. And so there are department companies that are procuring their own PPEs, and therefore they are compelled by law to implement local content, especially on the textile related. So we have worked with the National Treasury. We have revised the instruction notes, so making sure that local content is compulsory, and where we then products which are not designated to have asked. So and that has been amended, is dated on the 20th of May this year. That is the current instruction note that departments have to use when they procure PPE. So what we then indicated or included in the instruction note is that local content under Regulation 8.2 is a requirement in the products listed in this slide. You'll see that surgical masks, the FFP2 T2 and 3, medical textiles, linen, curtains. We also have shoes for nurses as well as hospital cleaners. So beds and mattress. So those are the products where it is compulsory to implement local content. And the second column, in certain instances, there are global standards that we must adhere to, and also the South African national standards that we must adhere to, including the ones that are being issued by, or the specifications issued by the Department of Health, the military, as well as the South African police. So the thresholds, we require 100%, meaning that we don't allow for the importation of materials or fully functional products. So where there is a request for the importation of materials, then the Department of Trade, Industry and Competition has to be approached to issue the exemption. So we only consider and issue the exemptions where there is no capacity to manufacture the product in the country. If there is, we don't issue the exemption. Then there are other PPE products which are not designated. And then we have asked departments to support local manufacturers using Regulation 8.4. And this slide shows which products are those which are not yet designated. And I've alluded to them. And so there are also international standards, because we are dealing with health-related materials here. And you'll see there that the last column also indicates the thresholds that are required in the procurement of those products. Now, to designate is one thing, and to be able to supply is another issue. Some of the products which we are procuring now were not in much demand in the past, but now because of COVID-19, we have to make them available. So the availability of material is an issue in certain products, and that is linked to certification and standards. You know, you can't just take any material and supply health-related products. So there must be certification and standard being issued. So there is work being undertaken by the department working with the South African Bureau of Standards and the Health Products Regulatory Authority. So team members at the DTI are part of the working teams to make sure that we fast-track the work in that regard. The other issue is that obviously the demand is high. Both medical and non-medical related demand of products. So the expansion of production is very key. The other work that we are doing is the matching of demand and supply. You know, the challenge which we are now realizing as a country is that public procurement in the country has not been linked to supply chains. The development of supply chains is a critical area. And the work that we are doing now with business, labor, and government is that we are building supply chains to provide these materials. So data is very critical. We still have challenges regarding the visibility of tenders and awards. You know, I've indicated before that you know, certain provinces procure on their own, including state-owned companies. Their interpretation of who is the supplier is also a challenge. So we are intervening on a daily basis to make sure that local content is implemented, because certain suppliers are importers, you know. So if you then overlook the product and look at the supplier, then we are having challenges. So we are working there on a daily basis, including partnership with the industry and labor, and making sure that we intervene in the provincial level in correcting some of the tenders that have been advertised. And that is linked to adherence to the local content regulations, you know. And last point there is about the reporting of tenders through the central supplier database at the National Treasury. It's still a challenge. It's not our responsibility, but to make sure that departments report through the CSD. But we are working with the National Treasury, asking for that information, following up with departments that have made the awards to see who is supplying, whether the suppliers do buy the material in the country. And members must also note that there is no requirement that only manufacturers must supply. Anyone can supply. Anyone who is being vetted in terms of the procurement laws can supply, but where there is local content, the material must come from South Africa, including the product themselves. So that's what we do in making sure that there is compliance in that respect. So this slide shows the work that is being done by government, business, and labor through, as you know, in certain instances, there is the role of business for South Africa and their work streams, looking at textile PPEs, masks, sanitizers, face shields, gloves, and testing. The data presented here is at the 12th of June. So this is an evolving environment, as there are outbreaks on a weekly basis, on a daily basis. There is a demand for certain products. So it's not a static data. It's dynamic and it gets updated. Even in this afternoon, there is a meeting on a weekly basis to look at the ability of South African companies to supply those materials as listed there. The orange bar graph shows the demand, and the blue one is the supply. So you can see there that the demand for gloves, face masks, it's, for now it's high. But my appeal to members is that, you know, as you analyze this data, don't take it as being finished or as it is, because it gets updated on a weekly basis. So, and that's what I've said, that this is very good for the country, because we are now linking, we are developing supply chain, you know. So, and if you can scale up this practice to cover area, it will be good, because there is no point of procuring without developing value chains and supply chains in the country. And we are learning a good practice through this process. Now, way forward is that we want to strengthen the work of the work streams and extended to other products which are designated. We are working with the National Treasury, Business and Labor to monitor PPE is only basis, we intervene, we write, and we require, we ask for information on the contract awards. The matching of supply and demand is ongoing work. We are scaling up the work by the Bureau of Standards to test and also verify some of the tenders that have been issued, and continue to enforce local content requirements. It's a challenging environment because of the number of departments which are procuring PPEs. We are working through provincial treasures to assist the national department in making sure that there is compliance. And lastly, it's about the issue of reporting. You know, enforcement without information on data, the awards, and making sure that the benefits accrue to local manufacturers. It's very important for us in implementing the work on local content verification and compliance. Yeah. Thank you very much, members.
Thank you for the presentation, Dr. Can I actually take, Secretary, the hands of members' questions for clarity and comment? Can I ask members just please stick to 3 minutes? It works quite okay.
Chair, Mr. Mumbuyani, followed by Mr. Cuthbert and Mrs. Hermans.
Can I ask those members in that order? Mbuyane?
Chairperson, thank you very much. I think I'm audible enough, Chairperson.
Thank you, yes.
Yes. Chairperson, maybe I'll start by acknowledging and welcoming the presentation. The presentation is eye-opening, Chairperson. As the president yesterday was addressing parliament, he spoke of reset of policies. The way in which we are doing things is no longer the same in which we were doing things, a new normal kind of arrangement, Chairperson. Therefore, Chairperson, I'm taking this issue from yesterday from the president in terms of the reset of policies vis-a-vis what we have in terms of our policy currently. I just wanted to check, Chairperson, in terms of the protecting and the blocking the market, how far are we in terms of reduced border tariffs and also create non-rules there, new rules in terms of all those issues? You see, Chairperson, I'm asking this question currently because there's this unfair trade, the rules selling products which are expired in the market. So I just want to check the new reset, the new rules in terms of the reset, what the president has just alluded to yesterday. Chairperson, I just want to check in terms of the implementation of local content and also the procurement of the PEE. The last time I checked, it was SABS that is dealing with local verification. Then now my question will be, it's SABS maybe also have the capacity to deal with this local verification, because the SABS was the manual verifying. I don't know, because now we have COVID, are they able to deal with those verification through electronica? Because they are struggling even as of now in terms of the ICT challenges, Chairperson. The other one, Chairperson, maybe will be the question of raw materials and non-processed material around it. So do we have any strategy in terms of the local beneficiation that will speak to that? Because I heard of a master plan of a polymer and a value chain supply, Chairperson. And also check whether the 50% local content into global value chain benefits or they are able to verify as to how many people in terms of the local beneficiation, in terms of the local content, they were able to get the jobs in terms of numbers, job created, maybe on the COVID-19 process, Chairperson. And also the black industrial into the value chain. We do have black industries. I'm not so sure in terms of how do we protect them, because we need to have a protectionist approach as to how can we be able to protect our black industrialists so that they are able to benefit from our policies, Chairperson. Maybe I'll pause there for now, Chairperson, for clarity. Thank you very much.
Right, we have the next member.
Mr. Cuthbert.
Cuthbert.
Thanks very much, Chairperson. Chair, the first question that I have is, what are the implications on the AFCFTA on the local content specifications? Will there be any reduction in these particular schedules of items when the AFCFTA comes into full force? The second question that I have, Chair, is that it's fine and well to say that we're looking after, you know, local producers of PPE and other equipment that's required for the COVID-19 pandemic, but I myself have tried to put businesses in touch with a gentleman by the name of Skalkuman, who is apparently dealing with procurement on government's part. And these businesses have received absolutely no feedback. So could the gentleman please provide us with the necessary contact details as to who we would be put in touch with? And then thirdly, Chairperson, the very ill-thought prams that are being used to transport grannies in the rural parts of the Eastern Cape and other rural provinces, which were unleashed or launched, rather, by government this past week. Can the gentleman please indicate whether or not these, in fact, did go for local content verification, and, you know, whether or not due diligence was done before these items were purchased by the Eastern Cape government? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. The next member, Andre.
Mrs. Simmons.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you to the doctors for the presentations. It is a discussion that we've been waiting for with bated breath by the Portfolio Committee. I just have two short questions, Chair. I just wanted to know if we can, if Dr. Makube can explain to us what is the censure for institution, including spheres of government, who are using these desperate times that we are in to procure offshore, such as the case in the Western Cape provincial government. I note that you are monitoring and doing follow-ups, but if organs of state don't comply, what happens then, besides asking them to re-tender? Because if we don't protect localization, we will not be able to turn this economy around. Also, secondly, this pandemic has shown that we are a net importer of pharmaceutical products in South Africa. And it's never been more glaring. That fact has never been more glaring than it is today in this pandemic that we are in. So how can we ensure that through enhancing localization, we can improve that and ensure that there is local production, increase local production of pharmaceutical products? Thank you, Chair.
Okay, I think those are the three you gave to me. Are there any further?
There's more, Chair. Mr. Thring, followed by Ms. Mutahung.
Honorable Thring and Mutahung, follow. Honorable Thring.
Thank you, Chair. I just have a few fairly straightforward questions or comments. Slide 4 speaks about your in terms of local content, speaks about fire engines or fire trucks being procured, I think, hopefully locally. But what about extending that to other emergency sectors like ambulances? Certainly, if we extend that to ambulances, that also looks at creating more jobs within the country. Secondly, slide 4 also speaks about, in terms of local content, the looks at solar photovoltaic systems. I would have thought that we should be looking at all of these photovoltaic systems being placed also on all government buildings. When I was still on economic development in Etiquini and Council, we visited an industrial area, and because of the irregularity in electricity supply, they put up the photovoltaic systems on their complex, but then needed to get certificates and compliance from the local municipality, and were told that they weren't able to operate unless they actually get all of these certificates and permissions to put up these photovoltaic systems. So I think the legislation in terms of assisting businesses, particularly where we have erratic electrical supplies in South Africa, we need to have a legislation that is going to facilitate and not to be a hindrance. And then finally, Chair, the slide 5 speaks about the minimum local content thresholds. So we noted that there's a threshold for the rail rolling stock and then the rail signaling systems. But what about coaches? I did see something where coaches were actually being manufactured in South Africa, and certainly that's a positive, and I don't know why that also doesn't appear in terms of what is being created in South Africa. Thank you, Chair.
The next member, Secretary.
Ms. Mutahung, Chair.
Mutahung.
Thanks, Chair, for the opportunity. I have only a few questions. One, I just want to understand, the local content means we should manufacture in South Africa, right? Why was it necessary in our specifications as the government we put the KN95 and the N95, because that is not the local content? Number two, do we have a breakdown in the local content of young people and women given an opportunity to supply? The third one was the measures. What measures were taken to help them to meet the demand, if there is any? My last question, where these opportunities were advertised? Thanks, Chair.
Thank you. The next member, Secretariat.
Chair, those are all the questions, Chair.
Okay. Can I then actually go back to DDG and the team for comments or questions which were asked? DDG, Pillar.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I will ask Dr. Makube to start. There's also a colleague of mine called Elaine Smith who will chip in probably on the PPE or on the mask issues, the N95, the second filter one, so that we put the conversation a bit into context. So let's start with Teboho Makube.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Chair. I'll attempt to answer most of the questions and my colleagues will come in. So what we are learning through this PPE procurement is that for localization to happen, we need different instruments. It's not only a matter of the preferential procurement regulations. Yet those regulations are critical in regulating the market, but no, the issue of tariffs is another. that we need to consider in protecting the South African economy. And if you follow the global trade development, you'll realize that countries are, you know, reviewing their tariffs, protecting their economies, including the U.S., which, you know, there are debates whether it's disregarding the World Trade Organization or so. So South Africa, I know that there are engagements with the revenue services. There was a meeting last week in making sure that we don't only talk about the tariffs, but we also make sure that we protect our ports of entry and we monitor what comes in. All right. And I mean, there's been a scale in the importation on some of the PPE products. So that engagement with the revenue services is very critical. There's going to be further engagements and products have been identified, work streams have been developed, and also SARS has been asked to look at particular products which, in our view, they pose a risk in protecting the local industry. So tied to that also is the role of the Bureau of Standards in monitoring and local content and verifying the product. There's been some engagements, and the Bureau of Standards is not only doing the post-award verification. It's now also doing some testing of the products, and there's work being done in developing some of the standards as highlighted in the presentation. So there is multi-government work being done, including business, and because business does provide, business and labor basically, they do provide important information and identifying areas that are inhibiting the proper implementation of local content, and that is beyond what is covered by the regulations per se. Now, the issue of raw materials is linked to standards. It's linked to certification, and also the availability in terms of the quantum of the demand. So that is why we are meeting on a weekly basis to intervene as government and resolve some of the challenges there in making sure that we give support to the local manufacturers. And as I've said, if the material is not available, we will then bring in the importation so that there is that balance. So the other question is in relation to the black industrialists. I'd like to link that to the role of young people. So we want to create, government has made the Black Industrialist Program its policy, you know, so we want to diversify suppliers in the system. And the instruction note to provide a space for young people to participate in the procurement of PPE, for black industrialists to manufacture and supply. So there is the need for funding. I've seen yesterday, so if there is an advert by SALGA as well as the UNDP calling on SMME manufacturers of PPE to apply for funding. So the IDC is also looking at the applications for funding. Obviously, they must make sense. So it is the government policy to provide opportunities for emerging suppliers as well. All right. This is going to be with us for a long period of time. It's not only the government that is procuring PPE. The industry, households,
So the more suppliers we have, the better in the country, so that we can have the adequate supply given the rising demand in the country. Well, there is a question raised by Member Cuthbert regarding the relationship between local content and its application in Africa through the Africa Continental Free Trade Agreement. So my understanding is that as part of the negotiation protocols, the Africa Continental Free Trade Agreement, they've decided to shelve the discussions on public procurement for now. So those discussions will be held at a later stage. But that does not mean that trade in PPE cannot happen. And the president, being the head of the African Union now, has appointed Strive Murarua, I think is Zimbabwean businessman, to coordinate the procurement and the supply of PPE in Africa. And that should be acknowledged, you know, and the role played by the political leadership, making sure that African countries do supply the products and not only import outside the continent itself. So work is being done in that area. But my view is that for now, local content is not an issue in the African Continental Free Trade Agreement. That the discussions will be forthcoming. Now, I've seen the trends in the Eastern Cape. Those are not designated for local production. So as the DTI, because it's outside local content, we can't officially comment on it. But obviously it's an area, you know, because it's part of the autos, that as we are scaling up work in supporting the autos sector, we will like, obviously, South African manufacturers to be given an opportunity to supply, but it's not an area covered through local content. And I'd like also to link that to the role of the designation of ambulances. You know. So there is work that is being done to expand local content in the auto sector. So this is an area that we will look at. We are also looking at the possibility of motor vehicles that are being procured by government, so we can include this. So I take it as an area that we must focus on and look at the feasibility of including ambulances. The coaches, the rail coaches, are covered under the rail rolling stock. So we have the locomotives, including the locomotives, wagons, as well as the coaches. So the work done by PRASA through Kibela in Danota, next to Niger, it's about local manufacturing of the coaches for the new fleet by PRASA. So that is included. The question on offshore procurement by Member Hammond. Yes, we engage with the UK that is, you know, not fully implementing the law, but they are engagements with other provinces to make sure that they do implement the law. There's been some mistakes when the first one, because the emphasis there was on compliance, that departments are procuring instruction note issued by the National Treasury, putting emphasis on the suppliers. And as I've said, you know, the supplier can be an importer. That created the problem. So we need to intervene. We did intervene, and the instruction note was amended. So the one that was issued on the 20th of May was in response to the challenge of bringing in importers to supply. So now we have closed that gap, and we are engaging the provinces. Obviously, you can
Andre, can we ask
yes, I'm just going
to switch off his video.
I can ask Dr. McCarver. Can you switch off your video perhaps, so maybe that will assist? Because we can't hear you clearly.
Regulate for the future, so where we can negotiate.
Dr. Makube, we can't hear you clearly. Dr. Makube, we can't hear you clearly. May you switch off your video?
Is there any
We couldn't hear you for the last minute or two.
Okay.
Can you switch off your video perhaps, and maybe that will assist with your sound?
Is the doctor okay?
Can you hear me now? Yes.
Yes. Yeah. Better.
All right. I don't know where when did you miss me, which area. I covered the rail rolling stock that we do include the coaches are included in the rail rolling stock, and the work being done by PRASA through the Gibela joint venture in Danota, it's about local production of the rail rolling stock. So under rail rolling stock, we include the coaches, the wagons, and the locomotives. I've asked Elaine to come in on the face mask. My understanding is that we have different ones, the K95, the N95. Those are the standards. There's FF2, but work is being done. There are manufacturers that are scaling up production, but also some to the health standards and the health requirements. So the Department of Work of Health is on those standards, but the DTI is involved in the work teams dealing with certification and standards as well as production of different surgical masks. But Elaine can add on that.
Thank you, Teboho. Good morning, honorable members and chairperson. Elaine Smith here from the DTI. On the question on the masks, why did we designate KN95 and N95 if we are not producing it locally? The KN95 is a Chinese standard. The N95 is a US standard, and then the FFP2, which is the equivalent of those masks, is an EU standard, and that is the one that is being produced in South Africa by a number of local manufacturers. So hence, if anybody procures those items locally, if they don't request FFP2, they're basically sidestepping the local content requirement, and we will not then give them permission to import because the FFP2s and FFP3s are being manufactured in South Africa. I think that covers the question on the masks.
Thanks, Elaine. I would like, through you, Chair, can I request my colleagues that work on the pharmaceutical desk to also assist on the questions from Honourable Hammonds around the fact that we are a net importer in pharmaceuticals and actually in the active pharmaceuticals ingredients, and what could we do in the short to medium term to change the picture. Between Claudie and Swasti, I'm not sure between the two of you who would assist on that one.
Okay. Okay.
Claudie?
I'm here. Can I go?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. So just to come to the issue on the local or the increased need that we have now for pharmaceuticals, given the COVID-19 pandemic especially, but also notwithstanding, South Africa has one of the worst disease burdens. So it is important that we ensure security of supply and development of this local capacity. So the designation of the pharmaceutical sector is then on a tender by tender basis. And what we're hoping to achieve there is to ensure that we have enough product, and at the same time that we have affordable product to be able to supply the country. So our challenge as government is then to reverse this and also to ensure that we have this affordable health care for the private and the public sector. So from a pharmaceuticals, why are we not having the production for pharmaceuticals here is that we import a majority of our raw materials. We are net importer. So you look at the chemical sector, the broader chemical sector, you look at the pharmaceutical sector especially, we lack the availability of raw materials. They have to be imported. We then face challenges in terms of pricing, etc., because of the markups that we have to do and so on. Another challenge there is then the technology. We don't have the technology currently. So these are all areas that we need to focus on and see. And also it's where we are based currently in terms of the rest of the world, you know. It becomes expensive for us to import and to remain competitive. However, the opportunity is there for us to start making inroads, especially in terms of the active pharmaceutical ingredients. If you look at the landscape of pharmaceuticals in South Africa, we have mainly formulators. We then need to look at how we can start moving towards the active pharmaceutical ingredient space, where that will give us some sort of competitive advantage. So we are busy looking at this at the moment. We're still at the infancy stage, and I think maybe I can ask my colleague to, if she's available, Swatsi, to also come in as head of pharmaceuticals. Thanks, Swatsi.
Good morning. Thanks, Claudie. Good morning, colleagues, chairperson and honourable members. I think Claudie, my chief director, covered it succinctly. The issue with the pharmaceutical industry is we are net importer of the raw materials. And unfortunately, you know, with the rand being so volatile, it often affects the cost at which we procure. And in addition to that, we do not have the scale that countries like India and China have. But that being said, we are with the Department of Trade, with the Department of Science and Technology, with the Industrial Development Corporation, with the Technology Innovation Agency, and with the National Department of Health, are investing in an API innovation cluster. where we are looking at molecules that we can develop new synthetic pathways for, so that when we look at the issues of scale, we can address issues of, potentially address issues of scale, negating those issues through new process development for these molecules, so that there may be opportunities using synthetic chemistry, new pathways, new chemical pathways, or new chemical processes to manufacture these APIs locally. Obviously, as a country, we'll not be able to do all of them, but we have selected a number of them from the essential drug list that we are looking at. In addition to that, I think in terms of formulation, whilst, you know, we are a net importer, South Africa is now have diversified the number of products that we can manufacture. In fact, the manufacturing platforms are in place for us to manufacture a great number of products locally. So, you know, we are looking at through various processes and how we can bring in more local manufacture. Again, the biggest issue for us is competing with the likes of India and China because of scale. But there are areas that we are looking at how we can overcome the issues around scale. Thank you. Sorry.
Okay.
Yes, can I just add a few points on my side? I think on the question from Oran Buyan around the role of SEPs, yes, SEPs is still the agency responsible for local content verification. But in the interim period, because of COVID issues, we have not been able to do a lot of verification because of lockdowns and so forth. But as part of the work of the department, we have also tried in the last budget cycle to recapitalize a bit of that mandate from SEPs to ensure that we are able to undertake some of the verifications. I think on the PPE work, I think we've done a lot of work on the supply side issues in terms of gearing up the local suppliers to be able to produce locally, to unlock some of their supply chain issues, deal with some of their raw material supply issues and so forth. But I think there's still a bigger role that the committee can assist with, particularly on the demand side. The procurement, I think Deborah's already made this point, that procurement across all items, non-necessarily on PPE, is a very decentralized process. So in terms of PPE, we are having a lot of provinces, both provincial departments of health, treasuries that are doing a lot of procurement on PPE. I think we can do a bit better in terms of reporting, getting a sense of who are the orders going to, and indeed are the orders actually finding their way into the local manufacturers and therefore boosting local production. I think we are here to plead with the committee to give us a bit of support in that area. That we are not able to always reach all the provinces to ensure that the reporting is done correctly and that the local content is done. The procurement is also done in a way that it affects the local content requirements. So I think that's the one area that I think we can do a bit of work on. When the lockdown was introduced, the minister also issued the regulations on export control measures, where we are controlling exports of masks, sanitizers, and some of the medicines. I think it was a way of, on our side, to ensuring that there's adequate supply to satisfy the growing domestic market. The regulation was changed. I think the latest one published by the minister was on the 11th of June, where we have tried to clean out some of the areas that we should be controlling, particularly because in the period itself, we have also seen a lot of opportunities arise in the domestic market for production of fabric masks, which we don't think we should be actually controlling. I think it's a way that we can really boost export opportunities for the local producers. So we continue to still control exports of medical masks, sanitizers, and also we have also reduced the list of medicines because in the period itself we have also learned on what are the medicines that are actually relevant and necessary to assist us with addressing some of the COVID measures. So to reduce the administrative burden on both ourselves and ITEC, the list has been refined to make it more focused on the work at hand. Similarly, we have also utilized the ITEC rebate, duty rebate facility at the beginning of the disaster management process. There was a rebate facility created where we had allowed for imports of those products to enter the market duty-free to ensure that we still remain as cost-effective as possible to the domestic needs while we are still ramping up local production. That facility was available for 3 months. I think it lapsed at the end of May 2020 because we believe we have built sufficient stock and sufficient capabilities locally to be able to meet our domestic needs. There's also interesting things that are going on the continent through, for example, the SADC Secretariat and also the AU process, where they are also looking at ways that we can ensure that we have got a portal where we are able to register manufacturers on the continent and in the SADC region that are able, that have got the capabilities to produce some of this PPE. We are party to that process. We are beginning to position some of the capabilities we've developed and position our local suppliers into that process to make sure that we are at least able to leverage on the domestic, on the continental demand, and also boost aggregate demand. Debo made the point about the procurement is not necessarily only in government. There's also a lot of procurement happening in industry as industries returning to work, and they have to implement this return to work protocols and ensure the safety of workers. We're working with the Proudly SA. We have created a portal where local suppliers of all sizes, but particularly the medium and township enterprises, have been given an opportunity to register on the portal so that we begin to also facilitate procurement from a private sector perspective to also be directed to the local manufacturers. So we are doing that work with Proudly SA, and it's part of some of the work streams that we are doing through the work streams that Debo spoke about with Business for South Africa. Thanks, Chair. I will end there.
Okay. Let's actually agree that in terms of the comments and questions, obviously on the part of the committee, there would be different things that were raised. But in terms of the responses, I know South Africa do have raw materials. There is lots of manufacturing that we're trying to get going. And on the other side, there is actually a very important issue compared to any other thing that we import, that South Africa should be able to look at good quality and standard of products that we produce, so that when we go even in our continent, someone seeing a made in South Africa will be able to say made in South Africa means quality and issues of policy implementation. So let's thank the department then for the presentation. This is an ongoing engagement, but the two subjects that we have had today, beneficiation and localization, it's about doing what we should be able to ensure that we grow our business and industry as South Africa using what we have. Can I ask that we then conclude our presentation? And maybe DDG, if ever there are any other issue that members will be picking up, we will try and follow through. And maybe for now, agree that we proceed to the next item on the agenda, presentations of beneficiation and localization. I think they are quite important. We would definitely have to follow through to ensure that there's implementation. There are huge opportunities in our country. We should actually take full advantage of that. Can I ask members to then allow us to take the next item on the agenda and thank the DDG and the team for the engagement, response, and the presentation. Secretariat?
Chair, we are supposed to proceed with considering the first draft of the fourth quarter financial and non-financial report. Chair, we distributed two members this report and requested that they do submit conclusions and recommendations We only receive from the African National Congress submissions on with regard to that, Chair. If we can fight that, share that document with members so that we can proceed with the consideration, Chair.
Okay. Let's actually look at the document, if you can actually screen it, project it on the screen.
Chair, first one, if I may proceed, Chair, was on the impact of COVID-19 pandemic on achievements.
Okay, I do not see the screen, but because we actually have got the document, if you can screen it, Secretary.
It's on the screen, Chair.
Or on my side, I can't see it at all.
I do not know if any other members have the same challenge.
Can I check? Honourable members, do you see the projected document?
We can see the document.
Yes, Chairperson, we can very much
see. Wonderful. No, if members can see that, I will actually go to mine, which was circulated through email. Can I then ask the Secretariat to proceed on the presentation of the document? Secretariat, you can proceed.
Chair?
I will actually, yeah.
On the first point, it was on the impact of COVID-19 pandemic on achievements. The way we captured this, the committee noted the impact of the COVID-19 pandemic on DTI and the EDD's ability to meet some of its economic targets, particularly for the IDET and TISA programs. If there's any comment to that effect.
We'll take a comment and or question on that issue. If ever there is no comment and members are comfortable with that, they can actually be quiet or maybe indicate it's okay, it's in order, we can proceed. Any comments on this point? If not, can we actually proceed that it's acceptable?
Chair, on the Youth Employment Services Program, the committee welcome the creation of 360 jobs through the Youth Employment Service Program, with 154 companies participating in the YES program, despite the current turbulent economic conditions facing the country.
Can I check if ever there's any comment on that item from honourable members? If not, can we actually then take it as accepted and agreed to? Then target, we can pick up on the item.
The next point, targets not achieved. While the committee acknowledged that there has been a lower than expected number of applications received from the center program, it remained concerned about the targets around jobs created not being achieved.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Can we check if members are in agreement with that addition? If not, can we actually have comments? If there are nine, can I actually take it as agreed to? No comments. Can we take the next item? This one is accepted.
Policy shift with respect to industrial development. Although the target with respect to publication of a new iteration of the IPEP for 2020 and 2021 was not met, the committee recognized that this was due to a policy shift of implementing industrial policy through a reimagined industrial strategy. It welcomed the collaborative approach in which master plans were being developed.
Okay. Can we actually check if there are any comments from members? No comments. Agreed to. Can we take the next one?
Small business assistance. Marvin, can we just move it up? The committee welcomed the economic recovery support initiatives offered by Trade, IDC and the NF to small businesses to assist them during the COVID-19 pandemic.
Okay. Can we take comments from members? If there are no comments, it's actually accepted, agreed to. Can we pick up the next item? There are no comments.
Under expenditure with respect to specific programs, the committee noted that the under expenditure in the investment, competition and trade program was mainly due to the funding allocated to the Terisano Construction Fund. This is due to a number of construction companies contributing to the fund going into business rescue due to the contraction in the domestic economy.
Can I ask for comments on the item? If no comments, can I take it as agreed to, accepted by the committee? Okay, can we take the next item, Secretariat?
Publication of regulations. The committee welcomed the gazetting of the regulations on the Competition Act related to price discrimination and buyer power in February 2020.
Can we check with members if there are any comments, questions for clarity on the item? If not, it's then accepted, agreed to.
Progress with respect to scrap metal, Chair, the next point. The committee welcomed the progress made in terms of the proposed export tax on ferrous and non-ferrous waste and scrap metal.
Okay. Can I check with members any comments, questions for clarity? If not, the item is accepted, agreed to. Can we pick up the next one?
I think that is still is. I think that's the last item, Chair. There is no recommendations. It's only concluding mark to be considered, Chair.
Okay. So maybe because we're looking at first draft of the fourth quarter, the cycle of our consultation and engagement on the issue. So which means this is the first, we will actually have to relook at the same report. Can I just get clarity then on how we're managing the process, Secretariat?
Chair, if there's no additions to conclusions and there's no recommendations, Chair, we will finalize the report in one and then present it to the committee next week for formal consideration, Chair, so that the committee have one full report which include the conclusions, Chair.
Okay. Can I just say, does it mean then for parties there is actually an opportunity to contribute towards the conclusion?
If they wish
to. If you indicate maybe between now and the next meeting.
Yeah.
If ever there can be any issues, if members would like to raise issues around the conclusion, we'll proceed in that order. But next meeting, we should be able to look at acceptance of the report by the committee.
That's correct. That's sure.
Okay. Thank you very much. Honourable members, I'm sure we can. Okay. Who's talking?
No, sorry, I'm listening to you, Chair, sorry.
Okay. No, I was just saying that it does actually then deal with that item where we actually have looked at the first draft of our fourth quarter report, and then we should obviously in the next meeting look at it in more detail in accepting the report and taking the process forward. Okay. So can I then ask that, Andre?
Chair, if we conclude that, Chair, then we look at the formal considerations of the oversight report, Chair. Last week we went through the conclusions and recommendations, and there was consensus on the matter. So we just need to present a clean document. And with respect to the Gauteng oversight, there were some additions made by the NRCS, which we will capture in red and just share with the members, but. This is basically just to formally move the adoption of the report, Chair. If Margot can just go down to the areas where there was changes proposed. Okay. All the red that we see, Chair, is what NRCS were proposing that we consider. So we just move sharing it with the members, Chair.
Okay. Can we then get to that NRCS proposal to see if the committee is comfortable with that?
It's just some technical and grammatical changes, Chair. All is indicated in red. If members can see it, if they are okay with it, we can proceed, Chair.
Okay. Maybe because on my part, I'm not
You want me to read? Yeah. Sorry, Chair. No. I'll just go up, Margot.
Chair. Side as well, Chair.
Okay. Let me just read. Then I will indicate the way before I read it that this is new additions. The NRCS new edition develops and, that is the only edition, administer technical regulations and or compulsory specifications. Develops and or was the additions that they've made, Chair, to that particular sentence.
Okay.
So then the other
to grammar, but it doesn't actually change the meaning of what we have.
No, Chair.
Okay.
The next one is the applicable compulsory specification may refer to national standards or a provision of the national standards. The change that they made, Chair, was may refer to and or a provision of the national standards. So it's just providing more clarity, Chair, in that regard.
Okay. Okay. All right. So if I think maybe we'll note that, if we can actually proceed. I'm not sure if it's all covered.
We can proceed, Chair. Go down.
Yeah.
Then the other additions that they've made, Chair, is that currently the NRCS also ensure that legal metrology, the word legal was added, technical regulations were added are met, such as weight, volume, and distance. So the word legal was added, Chair, and technical regulations. So it's just making it much more clearer, Chair.
Okay. So it actually has to do with actually the capturing of the essence without changing the meaning of what it. Okay. So can I just check, because it's legally compliant, if you say it's legal.
Yeah.
And there is a point that actually makes it more logic.
Yes.
Okay. Just maybe then ask if there's any further issues, but for honorable members, I think the addition is more grammatic, more than actually the meaning being changed.
Yeah, that's correct, Chair.
Okay.
So I won't proceed to reading it further, Chair, because that is basically the essence of it, just provided more clarity and in this regard. So we have the report before us, Chair. We need to submit it and move it for adoption, Chair.
Okay. Can I just say, because the presentation of today is formal consideration, one would actually have to ask the committee to confirm the acceptance or adoption of the report. Honorable members?
Chair?
Yes, sir. Hammond?
I want to propose that we formally adopt the oversight report as presented.
Okay.
Chair, we have Mr. Mbuyani, Chair.
Honorable Mbuyani.
Chairperson, thank you very much. I support the adoption of the report, the formal adoption of the report. Thank you, Chairperson.
All right.
Okay, Mbuyani seconds. Can I check if ever there's any objection to the report? If none, can we then say formally we have actually adopted the report of oversight visit to Gauteng and the West? Thank you very much.
Correct, Chair.
Can we then yes, exactly.
The next report is the Western Cape report, Chair, for formal adoption, Chair.
Can we check for Western Cape? There were no additions.
There was no additions, Chair.
Okay.
It was just putting the conclusions and the recommendations in the report. And I hope Marco can share the report.
Okay. Can we check the Secretariat, Marco?
Ms. Mantashe?
Honorable Mantashe?
Report presented to us. Can Mark only slide the conclusions that were added on the report?
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Mark, okay. This is the conclusions and recommendations here.
Yeah. Thanks, Tasha. I think let's actually have Mark. Thanks. Okay, Mark. On the website report. Yes.
These were the conclusions that was agreed to last time, Chair. So that is on the screen now. Margot can just, Margot is fighting it at the moment. So members can have a look at it again.
Okay. So those are the conclusions. Maybe Margot, you can just talk through and then we actually confirm. Margot?
Good afternoon, Chair. The first conclusion is about the Cape Town Film Studio and the IDC's investment in terms of that. and the impact on job creation and small businesses. The second one is about, the committee was concerned about the failure to increase the physical capacity of the Cape Town film studios and to develop other domestic studios as this has an, as a impact on the growth of the industry. The third one, we acknowledge the positive impact of the film and TV incentive program on transformation, which the industry noted.
Okay, scroll it up and scroll it up. Hi. Yes.
I was not seeing that it was not 5.3.
Oh, 5.3. Can you scroll it up? Because, Margot, you have spoken to 5.1 and 5.2. If you can scroll up to 5.3, I think that will be the next one.
I am there. I'm not sure if everybody can see it, though.
She's there.
We see it, yes.
Yeah. 5.1 and 5.2 on the conclusions. If you can scroll to the next one, that's 5.3 probably.
Yes. So it says the committee noted the industry's acknowledgement of the positive impact
can
of the...
Can you scroll it up?
It is scrolled up, Chair.
It's clear, Chair.
Okay, good.
Of the film and TV incentive program on transformation.
It's been scrolled up on our side.
Yeah, okay. Because I can't see that 5.3. I've seen the 5.2.
There's something wrong with activity, Chair.
That's better.
Your honorable string. There's something wrong with connectivity because we can see it as it's presented.
Wonderful.
Yes.
Okay, proceed, Margot. Sorry for that.
Okay, so it says, however, it being the committee was concerned that the sustainability of this growth would be dependent on the growth in the South African film industry's global market share. Number four, the advent of a number of live streaming service providers has led to an increased demand for content to be produced in a shorter space of time. This has exceeded the global supply of film studios and provides an opportunity for South Africa to grow its global market share, as well as the number and size of domestic film studios and production companies. 5.5, while the committee acknowledged the fiscal constraints and the need to spread the film and TV incentive to a wide number of stakeholders, it was of the view that the incentive program should be reviewed to consider either using a tax incentive or adjusting the cap to factor in the type of production and the amount being spent on it in South Africa. This was critical given the indirect economic benefits of foreign productions. 5.6, the committee welcomed the Cape Town Film... Yes, Chair?
Okay, proceed.
5.6, the committee welcomed the Cape Town Film Studio's contribution to producing local films and television series, but it acknowledged the concerns raised by the film studio that the absence of programs that would nurture the development of local content into films may impede the development of the local film industry. 5.7, the committee welcomed the film studio's contribution to the transfer and development of a variety of skills to local communities, which includes skills such as carpentry, construction, and costume production. Then 5.8 moves on to the other companies we visited. The committee noted the challenges raised by Rise Uniforms and the Noodle Factory about accessing credit from commercial and development financial institutions. There's a need for financial institutions, in particular development financial institutions, to relook at their risk models for small, medium, and micro enterprises. Then 5.9, the committee welcomed the approaches by the Rise Uniforms and the Noodle Factory to build partnerships with other companies to improve their competitiveness and economies of scale, thus growing their businesses and job creation in the process. Then 5.10, the committee acknowledged the technical assistance offered by the National Empowerment Fund and the Industrial Development Corporation to assist in developing Rise Uniforms and the Noodle Factory respectively. And then the last conclusion, The committee noted the challenges raised by the noodle factory regarding the impact and cost implications of load shedding due to the loss of production time and inputs. And then, Chair, we've got one recommendation, which says, informed by deliberations, the committee recommends that the House requests that the Minister of Trade and Industry should consider engaging the Minister of Arts and Culture to initiate a program to nurture the development of local content, including Indigenous stories, to translate this into film and television production.
Thank you very much. Yes, Andre?
There would just be one correction there, just Chair, is to engage the Minister of Sports, Arts and Culture. So the word sports will be added.
Oh, okay.
That's the fool.
That's actually what the portfolio is, sports, arts and culture.
Yeah.
Okay. Can I just say to members then, that's what we have before.
Chair?
Yes, Mbuyane.
Mbuyane, yes. Chairperson, thank you very much. I think 9.8, if I'm not mistaken, on the issue of RISE uniforms. The committee noted with regret that those workers were like sardines inside that house, and there were no ventilators and aircon. So they raised that issue, the committee. I don't know whether it's captured and how it's going to be captured. So that as much as we appreciate the job creation platform by the uniform, RISE uniform, but we were disappointed about the manner in which there were no ventilations, no aircon and so forth. So I think it has to be raised there as well so that it be dealt with. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
So let's look at that item, Margo, maybe if you can actually have a look at that. If ever it raises issues which were challenges, so maybe the suggestion that is being proposed is of the congestion to be added as part of that item. You said 5.8.
It will be a new point that will be added, Chair.
Okay.
Just the working conditions, yeah. About the working conditions, yeah.
I also want us to... Hello.
Is that Mantashe? Mantashe.
I want to ride on... What Honourable Mbuyane is saying, the occupational health and safety regulations are also not observed in that RISE uniform factory.
Okay, so can I say the suggested 5.11, committee concerned about the working conditions. And I would
Chase non-compliance with the occupational health and safety conditions.
Okay. So are you actually happy with that addition, Mantashe Mbuyane? So can I just check, Margo, if you actually have got that? That the committee was concerned about the non-compliance with the occupational health and safety condition at the RISE Uniform Factory. So you, without being specific, you think that will be sufficient? If Mbuyane, Mantashe, you're comfortable, then we'll pick it up like that.
Yes, I am comfortable.
In particular, the lack of ventilation and air cooling system. Okay. Can we then take that as an addition? And actually then put before the committee that the points that were suggested with the conclusion were actually is agreed to. Because we did actually raise that with this addition. Are there any further comments on the conclusion and recommendations? So if there are none, can I ask the committee that allows us to proceed with those conclusions?
Chair?
Yeah. Can I invite you,
Mbuyane?
Chairperson, thank you much. Thank you very much, Chairperson. I think on that, those additions in terms of the report, I will rise to propose that we adopt the report as presented with the addition made. Thank you, Chairperson.
Okay. So can we check if ever there's a seconder to the move of the adoption of the report?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I second.
Mutahu. Oh, Mutahu seconds. Are there any objections? Yeah, if none, can we then say for the Cape Town visit, the report is agreed to. Can I just check then, Secretariat, on the other issues that we need to look at? Because this actually concludes the consideration of the report of oversight visit to Gauteng and Cape Town.
Correct, Chair.
Okay, let's pick up the next item.
The next Chair.
Chair, if I may, it is now 12:01. I want to appeal to you to park the rest of the items until we meet again. We have other commitments that's immediately after this meeting, and I think it's going to be a problem if we cut into that time, Chair. We are supposed to conclude this meeting by 12.
Okay. Let me just do this then. For the NLC SANAS, the letters from Minister and Department, I will circulate that to all the committee members. Mm-hmm. And secondly, I think the issue relating to program of the committee, which was actually added, we will actually then circulate information secretariat to actually show the changes. The only point which I thought I should just try and listen to was the McPherson as a last point. We are not going to engage, but what I'm just saying, can we get those highlighted? Because on the issue of the NLC, we did actually also had a letter sent to the legal part of Parliament for advice. So, Secretariat, can we actually just get the conclusion part for part? McPherson, can I actually invite you just to talk?
Chair, it's Mr. Cuthbert, Chair. Mr. McPherson is not on the platform at the moment. Mr. Cuthbert.
Because wasn't it McPherson that was saying he wanted
it to... It was originally Mr. McPherson, Chair.
Chairperson?
Okay. Is it the same thing, Cuthbert?
Chairperson, I asked Mr. McPherson to put it on the agenda because I was running late to the meeting, so that's why I just asked him to do me that courtesy. Chairperson, okay. I just want to understand, number one, is the response that you're going to give us as a result of your Manco meeting that you said you were having last week? And then Secondly, I would like to provide some new information, and I feel please feel free to distribute this with the committee. You'll see I've sent you two WhatsApps. The first WhatsApp is the same organization that wrote to the portfolio committee, right? And levels all sorts of accusations against portfolio committee members on the basis of no truth, okay? And if you test for yourselves to see what this individual says in that and see whether or not the veracity of his claims, if they stand up. And the second issue, Chairperson, is that I sent you another document of an NLC newsletter that was recently sent out, possibly last week, where they go and publicize all of the beneficiaries of the COVID-19 fund, or shall I say a large proportion of them, without the amounts next to their name. So now what I don't understand is how they were able to provide that information. They weren't able to provide that information, but yet they can go and publish it in a newsletter. That seems like a mighty fine contradiction to me. So I think that also needs to be taken into consideration for this decision.
Okay. Can I just say that we will actually then share that information, and then in the next meeting, the committee will be able to actually engage on that and agree on the way forward. Thank you very much. Can we then ask...
Chairperson?
Yes?
Chair?
Mwen.
Thank you, Chairman, for the opportunity. I'm having a slight challenge here, Chairperson. That all of our committee meeting will now be discussing NLC, 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 and committee issues that were not even discussed by SG study groups and so forth. So I don't know if we can be able to cap that thing, because it will give us problems moving forward in dealing with new matters in the committee, with, besides us having to engage on those issues. Chairperson, also, maybe if we can have this matter of NLC and those ground up and the ones that they just wrote those letters dealt with once and for all, because we cannot have every committee meeting there's an NLC subcommittee there, the report, it cannot be proper, Chairperson. That is my proposal. Thank you.
Yeah, can I just say the MENCO will actually reconsider those issues. Honorable Cuthbert has raised more details. Let's actually make sure that the management committee is able to bring it to the committee for us to engage and resolve in moving forward on that issue. But for today, it was just a point of sharing information and giving an update. In our next meeting, I'm sure MENCO will come with a recommendation of what needs to be done to deal with those issues. Secretariat, if you can...
If I may ask Mr. Cuthbert to share that information with us so that we can have... the information, Chair.
Okay. Thank you. Can we then actually conclude? Honorable Hammonds, you are quite correct. We have come to the end of our meetings, because at least we shouldn't go over a lot. Mm-hmm. Can I just check, maybe, Secretariat, any specific issue you want to raise before we conclude? Secretariat?
Chair, it's just, I don't know if we have to raise the issue of the program for next week, Chair, quickly, or do we leave it till next week, Chair? The program on Friday.
Can I just say, let's confirm the next engagement of the committee. If the next meeting is next Friday, please confirm that.
Chair, the next meeting is next Wednesday, Chair. We're dealing with SABs and stuff. But the scheduled meeting on the Friday, Chair, we received communication from the House Chairperson that no committee should meet from 9 o'clock till should be because of the Youth Parliament. So we may not be able to proceed with that meeting that we scheduled for Friday, Chair. But that's a matter for the committee to decide. I thought I'll just mention it.
Okay. Can I ask that on our next Wednesday meeting, we're able to actually make an announcement of our next part of the meeting. But for today's meeting, can I thank all the members for participation, and I can ask that we confirm that 24th next Wednesday at 9, we will be having is it portfolio or joint?
No, portfolio, Chair.
It's portfolio committee on the 24th at 9 in the morning. Obviously, we do have that limit of 3 hours. Can I thank you very much for your efficiency and effectiveness? Our meeting is adjourned. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair.
Thanks very much.